Shafts of bright light rise from the surface of the planet Earth as it spins majestically in space. Bold letters encircle the globe. Universal. A chalk drawing of concentric circles becomes a shifting gyroscope, then fades to black. Working title. Rolling densely forested countryside.
This is the story of my family. Me, my three beautiful children, and my husband. There is our lovely farm. It's been in my husband's family for generations.
Nanny McPhee and the Big Ben.
The sad thing is, my husband is away fighting in a war, so we're on our own. We're all terribly worried about him, of course, but on the whole, I'm coping well. Very well. Very well indeed.
No fighting in the best parlour!
That's me. Coping.
Isabel.
Of you.
They're coping too.
Get off the furniture! Vincent, off! Get off the furniture!
We're all coping. We're fine.
You're on the furniture!
We're fine.
Then stop shouting!
We're not shouting. You're shouting.
We are supposed to be getting the farm spick and span before the cousins arrive tomorrow. And instead, all you're doing is fighting, when what I want to be seeing is sharing. Imagine how sad you'd be if you had to be taken away from home because of bombs dropping all over the place.
We're not sharing the jam with them.
What?
We're not sharing Dad's jam with the cousins.
Oh, no, of course not. That's for Dad when he comes home. I'm talking about your room and your toys.
Why won't he reply to my letter?
We're not talking about Dad, darling.
But why won't he reply? His last one came years ago.
A bundle of letters.
No, darling. Look.
Pretty Isabel Green shows young Vincent the postmark on the top airmail letter.
3 months ago. That's all. You see? Dad's in the army. They move him about a lot. That's all it is. There is nothing to worry about. All right?
Now, I've got to run, but you've got to clean up the farm for the cousins.
What are they actually like, the cousins?
They're city children. I imagine they're rather refined. And I am sure that they are very well behaved.
In their chauffeur-driven car.
Blenkinsop, he's bombing again! Stop the car, he's bombed all over my shoes!
Right, Blenkinsop, stop now. Where are my marshmallows?
Master Cyril, are them marshmallows a wise choice, given your recent evacuation?
Marshmallows are always a wise choice.
You beast! You ruined my brand new Fontarelli painted leather pumps and have left the pale pink at home! You beast! Oh, look!
A pink picture-perfect mansion.
How sweetly pretty. Is that the place?
Blenkinsop squirms.
No.
At Deep Valley Farm, the yard is thick with mud. A cow does a big poo in a barn. A great splash of mud comes flying out into the yard, and Megsy emerges, sweeping the ground with a broom.
The moon belongs to everyone.
Carrying a bucket, Norman traipses past a figure formed from two balls of mud with a carrot for a nose in the yard. Golden-haired Vincent pedals a stationary bicycle in a barn. The bicycle chain drives a system of belts and pulleys, which turn cogs and wheels suspended in the rafters. These in turn rotate an axle, which powers an old record player. Also driven by the contraption are a number of brooms, which swing to and fro, gently scratching the bellies of 7 little piglets laid down in the straw. The needle on the happy-o-meter points to ecstatic. The barn door opens.
Tomorrow,
and you said I'd scratch them before they went away.
Dad gets me in charge of what I say goes. Now get off!
But Dad built the
scratch-o-matic
for them. I said get off!
I'm getting off.
No more scratching.
I'm going to check the barley.
The needle on the happy-o-meter drops and a piglet scrambles to its feet. Vincent groans. Curly-haired Isabel hurries down a country lane. Buttoning up her blouse, she spots a jackdaw perched on a nearby wall.
Hello.
The bird totters along the wall, then looks at her and burps. It flies at her.
Chilly.
A man.
Hello, my gorgeous sister-in-law.
No.
Your coat's inside out.
Oh.
Nylons you need with that skirt.
No.
No, no what?
Oh, you know perfectly well, no what? I'm not selling.
Isabel, look at me. Look at me. Who am I? Who am I?
You are my brother-in-law.
I'm family, it is all I'm pointing out, and that's why you can trust me.
All right, Phil. What's your point?
Is we need to sell the farm now. You haven't even got enough money for tomorrow's payment on the tractor, and if there's no tractor, there's no harvest. If there's no harvest, the farm will fail.
I said no, and actually, Norman's thought of a way to get some money, so I will make the payment on the tractor.
Has he indeed? What way would that be?
I'm in a hurry, Phil.
Isabel, I can't point it out enough that I need the money. I'm only human, but that farm is half...
Half Rory's and half yours. Yes, yes, I know, because you tell me every time I see you. But you can't sell it without my permission, and I do not give my permission.
But Izzy, I've got the contract right here.
Goodbye, Phil.
A shop.
I'm here. Mrs. Doherty, don't start without me. Mrs. Doherty?
From behind the counter.
Who? Oh, there you are. I was so worried.
Oh, you worry too much. And it doesn't help.
It's just that you have been a bit forgetful, that's all. Now you look after the shop. I'll put away the deliveries.
Oh, I was managing perfectly.
Isabel frowns.
You haven't started unpacking, have you?
Wide-eyed.
Unpacking? Where?
Oh, all right.
Isabel rounds the counter.
I was just putting the flour away.
She's waist-deep in it.
Ooh, it's gotten foggy.
She wafts the air.
Ooh, could you pass me the scoop?
Phil walks down a lane. He gets collared by two blonde women, one more manly than the other.
Good morning, Mr. Green. We haven't had the pleasure. But I am Miss Topsy and this is my colleague, Miss Turvey.
Charmed.
Can you guess who sent us?
Sent to lovely ladies such as yourselves? Father Christmas?
You're flirting with us, Phil. Oh, I can call you Phil, can I?
You can call me whatever you like, sweetheart.
Don't be so naughty. Mrs. Biggles won't like it.
He tries to escape over a wall.
Mrs. Biggs says you owe her. You ran up a big fat debt in one of her riverside casinos. See what you've gambled away, Phil?
No!
I owe you one farm. Where is your farm, Phil?
I like farms.
We've come to get it.
And I respect that, ladies. And you'll get it. And Mrs. Biggles has nothing to worry about. I can fix it. I am fixing it. Please don't hurt me.
Oh, we don't want to hurt you, Phil. The fact is, Mrs. Biggs has told us to come back with one of two things. The deeds to your farm.
Or your kidneys.
Norman is about 12 years old and slim with dark hair. He stands in the middle of the barley field. The abundant golden crop comes up to his waist and sways gently in the breeze. He picks a piece of barley, bites it and examines it, then stares up into a cloudy sky and climbs aboard the tractor. Phil appears, his trilby perched at a rakish angle.
Not ripe yet then, old son.
Uncle Phil, where did you come from?
Oh, just on my way home.
Be ripe in a few days, I reckon.
Must be very proud. Your mum told me all about your idea to pay for the tractor. What on earth made you think of that, then?
He's all ears.
Well, I saw Farmer McCready at the shop, and he said he was looking to buy some Gloucester old spots.
Eh?
Pigs.
I knew that.
So when I offered to sell him our piglets, he jumped at it.
Clever.
Phil rests an elbow on the tractor's bonnet.
Very clever.
Norman fires up the tractor, startling Phil, who waves Norman on.
Come on. Feed it through. That's it. Feed it through.
Norman trundles off on the little blue tractor. Phil whips off his trilby and slaps his forehead.
Come on, Phil, think. Piglets. Gotta get rid of the piglets. No piglets, no tractor, then she'll have to sell the farm.
The cousins, Cyril and Celia, cruise through the village in their chauffeur-driven Rolls-Royce. Norman carries a bucket through the farmyard. He and his sister Megsie stare at the approaching car.
Look!
Shaggy-haired Vincent joins them.
Cool, look at that!
It's like a motor car!
It must be the cousins.
The
can't be the cousins. They're not due till tomorrow.
Megsy drops her broom and they scurry round the barn. The car parks in the farmyard. Blenkinsop pauses before stepping out into the mud.
Where are we?
We're in the land of poo.
Duck poo, hen poo, cow poo, goat poo.
Poo as far as the eye can see.
Here we are, then. How'd you get?
In fact, it's the British Museum of poo.
I've gone completely insane, Blenkinsop. Mummy would never send me to a place like this. Take me home.
Vincent pulls a face at her window.
You see? There are savages. I refuse to leave the car.
They put a sock in its seals. We've got no choice.
Take me home right now.
And you know why we've got no choice too. So let's just stop pretending we're here because of bombs.
They're probably cannibals. Cyril gets out.
Greetings, oh covered in poo people. Do you speak English?
You're early.
Yes, Pooh Man, we have come from far away. Far, from the land of soap and indoor toilets.
Is that a fries chocolate bar with cinnamon crunch topping?
Yes, it is. Would you like some? Oh, pity, there's none left.
Cyril eats the last piece and tosses Vincent the wrapper.
That's rotten. That's life.
Don't be like that, Miss Celia. Let go of the drinks cabinet, Miss Celia.
Look here, mister. I think you'd better take these two great perfume townies back where they belong.
Blenkinsop tries to drag Celia from the car, but she won't budge. He falls back into a pond. Celia steps in mud.
Oh, my shoes! I refuse to stay in this cesspit! I'd rather be bombed! Promise me you'll tell Mummy how awful it is here! Please, Blenkinsop, she's got to come get me tomorrow! Promise me! You've only been here for 5 minutes, and look at you! And you're just a chauffeur!
Master Cyril, if you'd be so kind, just hold your arms out for Miss Celia's new clothes.
Promise me!
I'll talk to your mother, Miss Celia, I promise. But for now, you'll have to stay here.
They can't stay here. They're rude.
That's rich coming from someone who clearly doesn't even know how to wipe his own bottle.
Come here, what? You! Stop! My clothes! My beautiful new clothes!
Norman chases Cyril, who flings Celia's clothes boxes at him. They fall open in the mud.
I should have enlisted.
Shall I tell my mother?
Vincent kicks a box.
My beautiful clothes. They're ruins. I'm in hell! You monsters, I'll kill you for this!
At Mrs. Doherty's shop.
Well, that's me off, Mrs. Doherty. I've just enough time to get home and finish tidying before the cousins arrive tomorrow.
Oh, that's nice, dear. All my cousins are dead. Good night.
Good night. Give my love to Mr. Doherty.
I will. Well, that's that finished then.
What?
I've just put away the treacle.
She licks her fingers.
What? Where?
It's all done and dusted. There's absolutely nothing to worry about. Oh, have a little faith, why don't you?
Isabel goes to a wall of drawers behind the counter to see thick, gloopy treacle oozing out from inside them. She drops her bag and coat, and they land in a puddle of treacle on the floor. One of the drawers pops open. As she steps towards it, her shoes stick to the treacle-covered floor.
Have a little faith, she says. Nothing to worry about, she says. Oh, no, no, nothing at all. Children at each other's throats. Tractor about to be repossessed. Oh! Phil trying to sell the farm out from under us. Guests coming in 24 hours. My only good coat ruined. And 17 drawers full of treacle.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
The jackdaw watches as Isabel peers into a drawer. As she shuts it, another drawer opens.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
Nanny McPhee?
Drawers slide open, appearing to sing. A teapot lid opens.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
The person you need
is Nanny McPhee.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
The lids of pots and pans open and close as if talking to her.
The person you need is
Wellington boots and brooms join the chant, as does a wall-mounted telephone. The drawers on the wall slam shut as Isabel flees from the shop. In the farmhouse...
What a surprise. Not only do they behave like animals, they live like animals.
I'm covered in poo.
Good news, you'll fit right in. There's bugger all to eat in here.
Dad's jam.
Except this.
No!
That's jam!
Put the jam down.
Cyril and Norman lock eyes.
It's only jam.
In case you hadn't noticed, there's a wall on. We saved our sugar coupons for months to make that jam. You touch it and I'll mash you.
Whoops. Touched it.
I'm going to wake up and this will all be a nasty dream. I'm going to wake up and I'll be in Harrods with Mummy, the shoe department. My maid tells me they've arrived, so Mummy and I have come to collect them. Would you go and fetch them for me? I'm going to wake up and there'll be some pink painted pumps.
Seals!
Mummy, you pair of them with a matching cloak, and I gather they'll be here today.
Cyril slides the jar down the kitchen table. It flies off the edge.
That's it. They die.
Cyril legs it as Norman and Megsy give chase. Vincent scarpers.
That's them! Ah! Come back!
A blustery evening. The jackdaw circles above the farmhouse as Isabel makes her way home. Isabel stops on a dark lane and stares up at the whispering trees. A cockerel-shaped weather vane spins above the farmyard, where Celia's colourful clothes remain scattered in the mud. Leaves fill the air in a flurry as Isabel makes her way towards the farmhouse. The jackdaw lands on the farmhouse roof. Isabel enters the house to find Norman chasing Cyril. They bash into her, and Norman starts throttling him.
Hello, dear.
Isabel.
Come back here, you big...
How's your mother?
Yes, and hurting.
Yes, lace-covered
pillow. Yes, peasant. Celia, is that you?
You ruined my clothes, so I'm going to ruin your hair.
Get up. What a lovely frock. Oh, what now? I'm coming.
A flash of lightning. The lamps illuminating the room flicker. A beleaguered Isabel makes for the windowed farmhouse door. A figure stands in silhouette behind the glass with what looks like a feather protruding from their hat. Isabel turns the doorknob and pulls the door open to reveal Phil, the hood of a raincoat over his head and holding a document up to shield his face from the rain.
Isabel.
Not now, Phil.
I was wondering, when you say no, do you really mean no?
A good time.
I can come back in 10 minutes. 5, 3, 2...
I think I should boil you all an egg. Oh, goodness.
She stomps over to the door and swings it open to reveal a stout old woman. She has a bulbous nose, 2 hairy moles on her face, a 1-tooth overbite and a feathered hat.
Good evening, Mrs. Green. I am Nanny McPhee.
Oh, you're it! Who are you?
I am Nanny McPhee. Small C, big P.
Right. Thing is, I haven't hired a nanny. I don't need a nanny. I'm managing perfectly well. I have never had a nanny because I don't want a nanny.
I am an army nanny, Mrs. Green. I have been deployed.
No. There must be some mistake. Everything's under control here.
Move me away from hell!
That's Cyril. He's not one of mine. He's their cousin.
You parasitic
bastard! That's Norman.
Get the hands off me!
He's mine. They've just met. They're getting to know each other. Through play.
Kill the ponies and eat their heads.
Oh, it's the war. It's not a very good influence.
Indeed. May I come in?
Must you? I mean, yes. Yes, of course. You must. Tea?
Perhaps later.
She glides in.
Let me introduce myself to the children.
The jackdaw enters.
No, wait.
Why don't you put the kettle on? I shan't be a moment.
The jackdaw skips under the hem of her dark skirt. Nanny McPhee turns and glides slowly through to the next room, the door opening and closing for her, as if by magic. She observes calmly as Megsy spins Celia round on her shoulders and Norman rams Cyril's head into the horn of a gramophone.
Please may I have your attention?
The children stop their antics and stare at her.
I am Nanny McPhee.
The children continue.
Please listen carefully. You are all to stop what you are doing and go upstairs to bed.
You look like a banana!
You look like an unraveled toilet roll!
Did you hear what I said?
What?
You are to stop fighting.
Get off me!
Immediately.
The jackdaw peers out from beneath Nanny McPhee's skirt, then retracts its head sharply as Nanny takes a crooked cane from inside her cloak and bangs it against the floor. A shower of sparks fly from the tip of the cane, sending a shockwave of energy across the land. The children turn to look at her.
Was that supposed to impress us?
Nanny cocks an eyebrow. Cyril raises a fist to clobber Norman, but finds he can't move and instead grabs himself by the scruff of the neck.
What's happening?
He flings himself head over heels.
Ow! Ow!
No, not me too!
Celia's pulling her own hair.
Oh no!
Vincent is smashing crockery with the cricket bat. Norman goes flying.
It's her!
What?
She's making us do it!
Ow! He's right!
What are you talking about?
It must be that stick!
Can't be anything else.
Ah! Stop us!
Stop us! Please! Please! Please!
On one condition, that you apologise for hurting each other and promise to stop fighting.
Apologise? I'm not apologising to them.
Well, I'm not apologising to them.
You broke the jam.
They should apologise to us.
Technically, it was Cyril who broke the jam.
Oh, no! What's happening?
There's letters!
By the fire.
Ow. They're going to get burnt.
Keep away from them.
I can't. It's making me. Please.
All right, we'll apologise. I'm sorry I hear you with the fire trouble, Celia. I promise not to do it again.
Me too.
Sorry, Cyril!
Celia, please, it's our dad's letters!
Ow! All right! I apologise! Oh, I'm sorry!
Cyril!
Apologise! Please, the letters!
Apologize.
Cyril!
Cyril!
Say you're sorry!
Nanny makes Cyril stick his fingers up his nose.
All right, I'm sorry!
Help!
As Vincent sweeps the letters off the shelf, Nanny bangs her cane and the room freezes. The letters are suspended over the fire. To the jackdaw.
What are you doing here, Mr. Edelweiss?
He plucks the letters from the air.
You naughty bird.
He flutters past the children, who are frozen like statues.
Tiresome creature.
Norman and Megsy are pulling their own hair, Celia is squeezing her nose, and Cyril is pulling on his own necktie. The bird, Mr. Edelweiss, flies over to Nanny with the letters.
If you're trying to impress me, it's not working.
He perches on her left shoulder.
Get off. Get off.
He does.
No. You are still not forgiven. You know what you did.
She looks at the children and brings her cane down with a shower of sparks. Released from their frozen poses, they turn their heads to look at her.
It is rude to stare.
The door opens behind her.
Upstairs to bed, please.
The four older children stand up one by one and file past her through the door. Isabel looks on in disbelief as they troop past her in a nice, orderly fashion.
Good night, Mum.
She blinks and shakes her head.
Good night, Aunt Isabel.
Night, Aunt Isabel. I do hope you sleep well.
Megsy, Celia, Cyril and Norman climb the stairs to bed.
Vincent. Would you please put those back where they belong?
Vincent takes the letters with a smile. He turns round to see that all the things he smashed have been restored to their unbroken state.
Ooh!
The crockery is all fine, as is a drawing of a tractor that got swept into the fire. Vincent goes over to the shelves by the fireplace and stretches an arm up high, returning the bundle of letters to their rightful place beside a china figurine on the top shelf. He trots back to Nanny McPhee and holds out the cricket bat.
Thank you, Nanny McPhee.
You're welcome. Off you go.
Vincent goes through to the other room. An unsightly mole beneath Nanny McPhee's nose slowly vanishes.
Shush. And make yourself scarce. Go on.
The window opens.
Shoo!
Mr. Edelweiss flutters out through the window. Nanny goes through to Isabel.
These children require 5 lessons, Mrs. Green. Lesson 1, to stop fighting, is complete.
They've stopped fighting.
She puts down the bat.
Early beds tonight, I think. Leave it to me. You should be able to have a little time to yourself.
Time to myself?
Time to myself?
Nanny goes up to the attic bedroom.
She's coming.
The children edge back nervously as she enters the room.
We're not fighting.
I can see that, Vincent. Thank you.
Look, I don't know how all that happened downstairs, but I'm in charge here, and I don't need some nanny to help.
My sister and I aren't even part of this family, so whomever you've come to look after, it certainly isn't us.
Listen to me very carefully. I am going to explain to you the way I work. When you need me but do not want me, then I must stay. When you want me but no longer need me, then I have to go.
How could anyone possibly want you?
Well, it's an odd thought, I grant you, but there it is. Now, to business. In the absence of any spare beds, Norman, I presume, will be sharing with Cyril?
I'd rather share with a goat.
A goat? Have you? Neither will I.
I see. Celia, Megsy, would you be willing to share a bed?
I'm not sharing anything with that vicious harpy.
I'd rather share with Geraldine.
She's our cow, and I'd rather share with an elephant.
Thank you, Vincent, but you will not be required to share.
I don't have to share. I don't have to share.
The rest of you, however, will have to come to some agreement.
Never.
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 Never!
Vincent bounces up and down on his bed. Nanny McPhee casts an icy stare at the children and takes out her cane. Downstairs, Isabel puts a kettle on to boil. She looks up on hearing the noise and sees a shower of sparks bounce down the wooden stairs from the attic. She rubs her eyes and looks again, but the sparks have vanished. She takes a blue teapot from the kitchen table, and as she stands with her back turned at the counter, a goat walks in from outside. Isabel sniffs the air. The goat plods upstairs and Isabel puts the teapot on the table. As she turns her back again, the door opens a second time and in walks Geraldine, the Green's handsome brown and white Jersey cow. She glances over at Isabel, who's busy laying teacups out on a tray, then clip-clops up the stairs, farting as she goes.
Oh, I am so sorry. I do beg your pardon.
How are they managing?
You must be exhausted. Do sit down. I'm making some tea.
Sorry, I haven't got any biscuits. No one's got any biscuits.
A baby elephant enters.
Are they all right up there? Are they sharing?
Yes, they're sharing very nicely.
Indeed.
They came up with all the arrangements for themselves.
Isabel turns.
But that's a miracle. What did you... How on earth did you do it?
I'm afraid that's classified information, Mrs. Green. The army is very strict about such matters.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Nanny conceals the baby elephant.
Tea!
Isabel hurries through to the larder. Nanny pats the baby elephant on the bottom and sends it upstairs.
Can you believe it? I haven't even a plain old biscuit to offer you. I'm so sorry.
The elephant plods onto the landing.
Oh, you're not leaving us, are you?
Certainly not.
Thank goodness.
These children need me.
Thing is, I can't afford to pay you at the moment,
but... Do not concern yourself, Mrs. Green.
The army remunerates me, and I have arranged my own accommodation.
Oh. She takes a lamp from inside her cloak.
Good night, Mrs. Green. Enjoy your tea.
She leaves.
Move over your hoof in my ear.
I haven't got hoof.
What are you, you idiot, Geraldine? What is that perfectly frightful stench?
The goat, you fool.
This is that ghastly nanny is doing. I know it is.
Would you like a pillow, little Ellie? You're a bit big for this bed. But I don't mind.
The mole on Nanny's chin disappears.
Geraldine, you're not cooperating. Cooperate! Just go to sleep.
Phil comes face to face with Nanny McPhee, who's been listening in on the children from the yard.
Calm yourself.
Are you Mrs. Biggles?
I am Nanny McPhee. Small C, big P.
She looks him over.
Good evening.
She walks away. Phil furrows his brow. His beady eyes shift left and right. Biting his lip, he creeps into the farmyard, glances towards the house and steals off into the shadows. The sounds of snoring drift out through the open window of the attic bedroom. Inside, Megsy and Celia sleep top and tail next to Geraldine, and in the next bed, Norman and Cyril are tucked up with the goat. In bed together in the far corner of the room are Vincent and the baby elephant. The elephant steals some of the covers with its trunk, leaving poor Vincent uncovered. Isabel sits in bed reading one of her husband's letters. There are photos of them both on the bedside table. She smiles and sniffs a sprig of lavender, which she folds back up in the letter.
Well, my darling, where are you?
Phil's by the barn, digging with a shovel in the dark. He throws the shovel aside, pokes his head down through the hole, and peers into the barn's pig pen. One of the piglets scurries into a hole beneath some wooden beams and disappears beneath the floorboards. Phil stands up and immediately falls over. The piglet emerges through the hole beside the barn.
Off you go, piglet. That's it.
The others follow.
Once you're gone, I'll get the farm.
Dawn breaks over Deep Valley Farm. Nanny McPhee strolls into the children's bedroom. The animals have gone and the children are asleep in their beds. She blows into a brass horn. They wake.
Rise and shine. Beds made, nice neat hospital corners, if you please. Downstairs for breakfast. At the double.
She goes downstairs.
My elephant's gone.
May I just say, it's typical of this family to have hired a nanny with a face that could win the war hands down.
We've not hired her and she's not our nanny.
Who is she then? And how did she make us do all those things?
I have a theory. She's a secret weapon. Definitely. My father's very high up in the war office, so I know about these things. I suspect that that stick of hers releases some sort of odourless chemical when she bangs it. To put it simply, she gassed us.
Don't be daft.
That can't possibly be legal.
I am pleased to report, Mrs. Green, that lesson two, to share nicely, is complete.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Norman and Megsy come downstairs, followed by Cyril, who's dressed in purple silk pyjamas, slippers, and a gas mask. He sees Nanny McPhee emptying porridge into a bowl and takes a seat at the table which has been set for breakfast. Isabel looks over at him and gawps.
You, Cyril?
It is.
Good morning, darling. Why are you wearing a gas mask?
In case of a gas attack, Aunt Isabel.
A gas? I don't think there's going to be a gas attack in this part of the country, darling. That's why your parents sent you here. Poor thing. London must be worse than I thought.
Hmm. Where's Celia, dear?
Looking for something to wear.
Oh, yes.
I am so sorry. Your mother will never forgive me.
Cyril goes to eat a piece of toast, but the gas mask gets in the way. Celia goes through a wardrobe full of dresses.
Oh, don't tell me that's cheesecloth. Ugh, horrid, ugly, shapeless.
At the table...
Don't forget, Norman, Farmer McCready is coming for the piglets at noon. I'll be back in time for that. I've got to run. There's a delivery of mouse traps at the shop. Got to get to them before Mrs. Dotty.
Mr. Edelweiss pecks at the window.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
The window pane smashes and Nanny turns to him.
I'll see you outside.
She does so.
Oh, don't be so disgusting. You have wind because you have collywobbles, and you have the collywobbles because you have been eating window putty. I'm not interested, Mr. Edelweiss.
He flies into the barn and Nanny peers inside.
All the piglets have gone.
She sees the tunnel they escaped through.
Yes, that is interesting. Very interesting.
Megsy replaces the window pane.
That's that done.
Norman.
Right, chores. Megs, feed Geraldine. I'll get the piglets ready for Farmer McCready. Vinny's collecting the eggs. Cyril, you can sweep up the dung.
I'd love to sweep up the dung. It's almost my favourite activity, but sadly I've left my dung sweepers at home. Perhaps Celia...
I'm coming back for you.
Cyril sneers and rolls his eyes, then continues to read his newspaper. Megsy turns to see Celia descending the stairs in a flowing white wedding gown.
What are you wearing?
I think it's mostly tulle.
Norman carries a bucket into the barn and sees the empty pig pen.
That's my mother's wedding dress.
No, this old thing. It can't be. It hasn't even got a train.
Take it off.
I will do no such thing. You've ruined all my clothes, and this is the only decent thing in the house.
You've stolen that from our mother's room. Take it off.
I haven't stolen it. I've borrowed it.
The piglets have escaped.
What?
There's a hole!
They're all gone!
We've got to find them before Farmer McCready comes!
Come on, Norman!
Move! You can't be serious.
Listen, they're prize piglets. The money we get for them pays this month's tractor hire. And if we lose the tractor, we lose the harvest. And if we lose the harvest, we'll lose the whole farm.
How frightful for you.
Please! This is our dad's farm and the harvest is everything!
No!
You can't make me.
And you can't make me either. I've got my gas mask on so that stick of yours won't work.
Nanny McPhee deliberately puts her stick aside.
Furthermore, I'm going to report it to my father, who is very high up in the War Office.
There's no time for this.
What if it was your dad's farm? You'd help them, wouldn't you?
Nanny cocks her head.
Would you, Cyril? Help your father?
He peels off the mask.
Oh, blast you all!
He stomps out after Norman and Vincent. Nanny McPhee picks her stick up in her right hand and turns to look at Celia, who stands on the stairs in the brilliant white gown. Nanny locks eyes with her and nods towards the door.
Oh, no, no, no. I can't possibly run in these heels.
Nanny steps closer.
Don't you dare gas me!
Celia retreats fearfully, pressing her back against the banister. Nanny McPhee raises her right hand to reveal a pair of Wellington boots. Cyril struggles up a grassy hillside towards Norman.
There's one.
A pig.
What are you doing here?
Just helping.
Well, come on if you're coming.
Megsy, Vincent and Celia chase a cluster of piglets through a field. Megsy dives at one.
I'm only helping till Mummy comes.
The kids dive into the grass after the piglets, but they're too quick and scurry away. Celia captures one. One of the piglets scampers through a field of buttercups, chased by Norman and Cyril. They close in on it by a tree.
Right, take it slowly.
To Mr. Edelweiss.
They've caught two already. That'll never do. Well, we don't want to make it too easy for them.
She bangs her stick on the ground and the cornered piglet scurries up the tree. It clambers onto a high branch.
What on earth's it doing?
They stare up in awe as the piglet performs a gymnastics routine on the branch.
Blimey!
The piglet smiles at them and they share a look of disbelief. The piglet bounces on the branch, using it as a springboard to send itself soaring through the air. It lands on another tree nearby and drops down to the ground.
Is that normal?
No, it's not.
They chase after the pig.
I had no idea country life could be quite so entertaining.
Nanny McPhee bangs her stick on the ground and the piglet Celia's holding shoots out of her grasp. Megsy, Celia and Vincent turtle after it down a steep slope at the bottom of which is a large pond. The pig does a high somersault and dives in. Megsy frowns. The piglet swims a short distance, then looks back at them, holds its snout and disappears beneath the water. Two sets of pink hind legs emerge from the water and begin a synchronized dance. The legs of four other pigs pop up too, and together they scissor and spin in a graceful dance. The pigs turn onto their sides to form a six-pointed star, then one by one dive down beneath the water.
Did you know? I had no idea pigs could swim so stylishly. They can't!
Four piglets form an underwater hoop for the other two to pass through. Then five of them link front legs and toss the sixth, who clutches a water lily, in the air. He comes down with a splash, wetting the children. The children laugh as the piglets swim away in a long line, like a string of sausages. Phil spots bearded farmer MacReady trundling down a country lane on his horse-drawn cart. Phil tries to scarper.
Ahoy there, Phil!
Hello, Farmer MacReady.
Whoa, then, whoa, whoa.
Phil glances back at MacReady.
Sorry you hear about the piglets.
Piglets? What, my piglets?
Yeah, haven't you heard? They've gone, disappeared in the night, escaped.
Escaped? Dear, oh dear, what a shame.
Dreadful thing.
Escaped, eh? Funny things, pigs. Clever. I knew a pig once, could play Scrabble. Tapped out the words with its trotter. Stoy, good score. Dear, oh dear. Isabel, I've been a right old tease, I think. Well, thanks for letting me know, Phil. You saved me a journey.
Bye then.
Phil hurries off down the lane.
Wait up there. One good turn deserves another. I'll give you a ride up there.
Oh, no. No, no, I'll walk.
Jump in.
No, I'm good, thanks.
It's no bother.
Turn around.
Don't be daft.
Cheerio.
Come on now.
Shoot.
Up you jump.
No, please.
Go on.
All right.
Phil screws up his face and climbs aboard. The children gather on the hillside as the piglets run away.
I don't know how we're ever going to catch them.
They're getting sold in half an hour.
If I may suggest, we need to use strategy, tactics, a proper movement order.
And you're trained where, exactly?
Cadet school. Fair enough. Go on then.
Right. Now, we're here and they're there. There, and possibly over there.
Norman and Cyril sit on a fallen tree trunk suspended over a pile of apples on a pathway.
Megsy?
Ready.
Celia?
Ready.
Norman puts his hands to his mouth and whistles. Norman and Cyril hold Isabel's long wedding veil between them. The pigs come racing down the path. Vincent is chasing them with a stick. He has one hand clamped over his head to hold his oversized pith helmet on. Celia and Megsy are perched on a bank beside the path. Norman and Cyril look at each other and mouth a countdown. 3, 2, 1. They drop the veil on top of the piglets.
Picked up a hole.
Where are the piglets, Isabel?
Oh, they've gone.
Oh, no.
Every single one.
Piggy.
Gone. What will we do?
They maybe got wind of the move, Mrs. Green. Yeah. Clever things are pigs.
Very clever.
How will we pay for the tractor? How will we get the harvest in?
I'll try and help if I can, Mrs. Green, but I've got my hands full with my wheat and what with my boys off fighting.
Terrible thing, war. Curse these flat feet.
I'm sorry you've had a wasted journey.
Oh, no, not a worry.
MacReady goes.
Good luck.
I know. They're hiding.
Phil whips out the contract.
Isabel, sign it. I've a buyer today. I might not have a buyer tomorrow. It won't be so bad. Think about it, Is. No more worrying about tractors or harvests.
Pigs! Pigs!
MacReady looks out from the farmyard as the children return triumphantly with the piglets, some in their arms and some on leads.
Children!
Phil glares. MacReady takes the back off his cart.
Look!
Hurrah!
Isabel races over. The children load the piglets onto Farmer MacReady's cart.
Right. There you are.
Tractor money.
Phil glances at the contract, then goes to turn away, but his feet get stuck in the mud. He pulls them free and scurries off. MacReady hands money to Isabel.
They're worth a lot more than that, you know. These piglets are geniuses.
They can do synchronized swimming.
We do not tell fibs in this
house.
They
really did.
Megsy.
But they did do synchronized swimming.
That's enough, Megsy. Shush.
They can climb trees.
Stop telling fibs. Pigs don't climb trees. Stop being so silly.
Oh, he's only trying to get a bit more for them. And quite right, too. Clever things are pigs.
He hands over some extra cash and Isabel gives him a big kiss.
Thank you. All right, come on.
I knew a pig once could count to 10 in French.
Really?
No.
Isabel shows Vincent MacReady's horse.
Synchronized swimming.
Climbing trees? The very idea.
It was true.
Megsy spots Nanny McPhee staring at them.
It was like magic.
The children all turn to look at her.
Yes. Like
magic.
MacReady closes his cart.
Synchronized swimming.
Isabel puts her arms around the children.
I'm so proud of you. Let me hug you.
She looks at Celia and her face drops.
Is that...
Nanny McPhee watches.
Is that my wedding dress?
It was our fault. We spoiled Celia's...
No, it's my fault. I borrowed it without asking. I didn't mean to chase the piglets in it. I'm terribly sorry.
Isabel gazes at Celia.
Where's the veil?
We used it to catch the piglets.
It's here. That was my fault, I'm afraid. We needed a net. Sorry.
He hands the filthy veil back to Isabel, who shakes her head.
Well, I never.
The children look at the ground.
How clever you all are! I'll tell you what. Tomorrow we'll jolly well have a picnic. And after I've paid up the tractor, we'll use the extra pennies for ginger beer.
Hooray!
To herself.
Lesson 3, to help each other, is complete.
Her monobrow is magically separated. She looks over at a piglet peering at her from the cart. She winks at it. The piglet winks back. She brings a finger to her lips and the piglet hops down inside the cart. MacReady raises his brows.
Clever things. Pigs.
He trundles away on his cart.
Piggies.
The Rolls Royce.
Mummy! Look, it's Mummy! See, I told you she'd come.
Seals don't.
Mummy, you'll never guess. We just rescued some little pigs. They were dancing and...
Celia opens the back door of the Rolls Royce, but there's nobody inside. She gently closes the door. Nanny McPhee and the children watch as Celia looks in at Blenkinsop.
Where's Mummy?
Her ladyship's still in London, Miss Celia.
Norman and Cyril share a look.
But did you give her my message?
I did, Miss Celia.
Has she sent you to bring me home?
Celia smiles.
Regretfully not, Miss Celia. My only instructions was to bring the pumps you left behind. Fontarelli, I believe.
Blenkinsop holds out a turquoise shoebox. Celia looks sad as she takes it from him.
I suppose she's very busy.
That's right, miss. She's very, very busy.
Celia hangs her head and steps away from the car. Blenkinsop looks ahead sadly. Celia marches out of the farmyard, her eyes filled with tears. Cyril turns to Norman.
What are you gawking at? We're not some freak show, you know.
Cyril, we didn't mean
to... Get away! You don't know anything about us!
He goes after his sister. Celia throws her shoebox down as she strides off across the field. Norman and Megsy stare after them, then turn and head back across the farmyard past Nanny McPhee, who stands watching them. She cocks her head thoughtfully. Fluffy clouds drift through the sky above Deep Valley Farm. Looking sad, Celia sits on a bed in the children's attic bedroom. Megsy puts the shoebox down beside her.
I don't want them. Can I look at them?
Celia shrugs. Megsy sits down on the bed and takes the lid off the shoebox. It's lined with pink tissue paper. Megsy reaches inside and removes a delicate pink Fontarelli pump with a little bow on the front. She gazes at it in awe. Celia looks at her.
I don't care for them. You can have them if you want.
Megsy meets her gaze, then carefully returns the shoe to its box. She stands up and puts the shoebox down, then opens a chest at the foot of the bed and takes out some neatly folded clothes.
These are my best, but you can have them for every day.
She puts them on the bed and sits down with the shoebox in her lap. Celia looks at the clothes. On top of the pile is a cute white button-down blouse with blue spots on it. She holds it up to her chest and smiles, then places it on the bed beside her. In the bathroom, Isabel washes her wedding veil in the bathtub. She scrubs it with a bar of soap, gives it a rinse and holds it up. It has a large tear in it. Isabel remembers her wedding day. Coloured streamers trail from the back of a farm cart that has been decorated with sunflowers. Wearing the white dress and veil, she sits aboard the cart with her handsome, smiling husband. He wears a flat cap and sharp suit with a few ears of barley pinned to his left lapel. They laugh as they stand in the muddy farmyard, him in Wellington boots and her barefoot. He scoops Isabel up in his arms and she gazes into his eyes with a loving smile. They kiss and he carries her towards the farmhouse. In the present, Isabel hangs the white lace veil on the washing line by the wooden wedding cart, which is now a rickety shadow of its former self. Isabel and the children stroll out across the open fields. Megsy has a goat on a lead and Isabel carries a wicker picnic hamper. They set up in the long grass and the children run and play. Norman goes for the hamper. Mr. and Mrs. Doherty arrive.
Mr. Doherty, how thoughtful. They've put out cushions.
Mrs. Doherty, I regret to inform you that that's a cow pat, not a cushion.
Oh.
She looks at it.
Well, can't I sit on it anyway? It looks so comfortable.
Oh.
There we are. Can you help me down? Oh, yes, it's very comfy.
Yeah.
You're going to sit down. There we are.
Would you like a bun, Nanny Maxie?
Nanny slaps her own wrist.
I think I'd better not, thank you. Oh, for heaven's sake, get away with you, Mr. Edelweiss, you revolting bird.
He lands on her shoulder.
Get off. I don't want you there.
What's he done to make you so cross with him?
He eats inappropriate substances. I'm so sorry.
Such as?
Such as window putty. Oh.
Window putty.
Such as the window putty in every single one of my window panes, which all fell out at once. Oh, please.
That's bad.
I don't care how much you love it, you deplorable creature. It is a nasty habit.
What are all your medals for, Nanny McPhee?
Mr. Edelweiss hides behind his wing.
Courage, kindness, resolve, imagination, enthusiasm, basket work, and leaps of faith.
Sandwiches!
Hooray! In my capacity as warden, Mrs. Green, might I suggest that you provide the family with protective headgear in case of bombs dropping all of a sudden? Mrs. Doherty and I wear these at home.
I don't think bombs are going to drop in this part of the country, Mr. Doherty. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that is where you are possibly even tragically mistaken. Picture this. An enemy plane carrying an enemy bomb. An enemy pilot with a bad cold. They get them, you know. Same as we do. He sneezes once. Achoo! Nothing occurs. He sneezes a second time. Achoo! Again, all is well. He sneezes a third time, and watch very carefully now. Achoo! He hits the big red button with his big red nose, and it booms away.
Oh, kettle's boiled.
He throws up his arm.
Big bang.
Oh, dear, what a thought. We'll just have to hope that none of them catch the cold, won't we, Mrs. Dougherty? Egg and cress or bloat paste?
A ham.
Vincent does a handstand and the girls clap. Vincent sneaks up on Isabel as she dozes under a sun hat. Isabel pours glasses of ginger beer for the children.
Quick, hide the cake!
Phil approaches.
Here he is with a silly contract. Oh, wait, that looks more like a letter! Norman, Megsy, Uncle Phil's got a letter for us!
Oh, a letter from Rory, that'd be nice after all their waiting.
Mrs. Dougherty narrows her eyes.
That's not a letter, dear.
Isabel stands with her arms around Megsy and Vincent.
It's yellow. It's a telegram.
What's that?
From the War Office.
Nanny McPhee looks on as Phil approaches with the telegram. Vincent, who wears his pith helmet, looks up at him.
That's not for us, is it?
Solemn-faced Phil, dishevelled as always in his crumpled blue suit, hands the yellow envelope to Isabel. She looks at him with a smile.
That's not always bad news, is it?
He smiles sadly. She looks at the Dougherty's.
I mean, we've got to have a little faith, haven't we?
Mr. Dougherty in his tin hat and warden's uniform stands beside Mrs. Dougherty, whose eyes glisten with tears. Smiling hopefully, Isabel opens the envelope and takes out the telegram. Her smile fades as she reads.
Oh.
She falls to her knees.
Mum?
Norman takes the telegram. He and Megsy read it.
Killed in action.
Nanny McPhee bows her head sadly. Norman walks away by himself. Megsy rests her head against Isabel's back and sobs as Phil squats to comfort them. Mr. Dougherty leans closer.
I'm sorry.
Mrs. Dougherty takes her husband by the arm and leads him away. Isabel's eyes rove as Norman walks away across the field. She lulls her head back with a sigh. Phil kneels with his head hung, clasping Isabel's hand in his own. Norman sits alone in the barn, staring at the scratch-o-matic his father made. Cyril enters and stands with his arms by his sides.
Rotten luck.
Norman looks round at him. Cyril walks up beside him and looks at the system of swinging brooms.
It's a brilliant bit of design, this machine. You must have been a terribly
good... He's not dead, you know.
Cyril turns to him.
What?
He's not dead. I know he's not. They've got it wrong.
Norman, the army doesn't get it.
They've got it wrong.
Sorry. But how? How do you know?
Look, my dad's always saying he feels things in his bones. He can feel weather coming, and he knows when things are going to happen, like if a cow's going to calf, or if a lamb's in trouble. And he's always right, every time. Well, I can feel it in my bones that he's alive. I just know it.
You don't think that you feel this way because you've just heard?
No, it's not that. I just know.
Cyril nods.
All right.
They both sit.
So what do you want to do about it?
We need to find out where he is, and we need to find out fast. Mum will sell the farm if she believes he's dead. She'll think we can't manage it on our own. The thing is, how do I find him? I can't very well go off looking for him.
There might be a way.
What? What? Tell me!
Well, it's just my father. He's very high up in the War Office. Exactly. He'd be able to find out quickly.
Where is he?
London.
Then how do we get to him?
I don't know. We need help. Shall we ask your mother?
No. No, we need to prove that he's alive. Bring her proof.
Then who? Who can help us?
Nanny McPhee rides a motorbike. She looks down at Norman and Cyril, who ride in a sidecar. Wearing leather goggles, the three of them hurtle down a country lane. Megsy and Celia are mucking out the stable. Megsy has found a note.
The boys are on their way to London.
They can't be. They said they were checking the valley.
No, listen. Megs, Dad not dead. Feel it in bones. Don't tell Mum. I've gone to London with Cyril to get proof. That's the only thing that will stop her from selling the farm.
But she's decided to sell. She said so. Can't we tell her?
No. Norman's right. We mustn't say anything till he has proof.
So we've got to stop her till he gets back.
Exactly.
Where are we? Chelsea! Haven't you been here before? I've never even been to London before.
They motor along the Albert Suspension Bridge past Battersea Power Station. Six ex-army Chelsea pensioners in scarlet coats and black hats salute as they pass, and Nanny waves to them. Norman looks on in awe. The motorbike follows a bright red double-decker bus down a busy street, then hangs a sharp left past some townhouses. Two spotted Dalmatians yap as they continue past Buckingham Palace. Nanny revs the accelerator, and they hurtle past Nelson's Column in Trafalgar Square. Cyril points at the statue on top. Nanny blows Nelson a kiss and the statue magically doffs its hat to her. Cyril points as a statue of a lion lets out a mighty roar, scaring the pigeons. Nanny turns left past a row of porticoed houses, but the road ahead is blocked by the Queen's cavalry. She slams on the brakes and screeches to a halt right behind the horses, one of whom looks round at her.
What are we going to do? This is going to take ages.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. I was hoping to avoid this, but, Norman, could you please turn that little red wheel all the way clockwise?
He does as he's told.
Right, thank you.
She leans back in the saddle.
Nanny McPhee, how long is this going to
The bike takes off. Norman and Cyril look down at the cavalry astride their black horses, their armoured chest plates and pointy helmets gleaming. They draw their swords as the bike floats over them to the front of the troop.
I can't bear London in the traffic.
Topsy and Turvey find Phil.
Morning!
Morning.
Sleep well?
Yes, thanks.
Look what I got!
What's that?
It's a kidney dish, Phil.
It fits two in quite snugly.
Surely you don't need both. Listen, ladies, the deeds to the farm will be in your hands before you know it.
Oh, I do hope so, Phil, because the fact is kidney removal is quite a long and painful procedure.
Oh, and we're on a very tight schedule.
They pull his elastic braces and twang them against his back. In London, Nanny McPhee parks the bike outside the War Office, a huge white building with rows of small windows.
Here we are. Out you get.
She climbs off the bike and the boys get out of the sidecar.
Ready?
Ready.
Best of luck.
The boys both wear suits. They look at each other, steel themselves, and start towards the building.
You all right?
Yes. Bit nervous.
A pair of heavy black boots, in which the boys are reflected, clomp down in front of them. Standing in their way is an enormous guardsman.
Please, sir, we're here to see Lord Grey on a matter of life and death.
Get loose before I thump you.
Norman mouths tell him to Cyril.
He's my father.
Prove it.
What?
Prove it or hop it.
In army uniform.
Sergeant Jeffries, you've grown.
Nanny McPhee, ma'am.
The burly guardsman takes his rifle from his shoulder and spins it round in a military drill. He stamps his foot firmly.
At your service, ma'am.
At ease, Ralph.
She steps closer.
Lesson three paid off, I see.
Certainly did, ma'am.
How's the army treating you?
Proudly, ma'am.
Have you learned to eat your greens?
His eyes flit nervously.
Well?
I can't lie to you, Nanny McPhee. Broccoli still presents a challenge.
Try it with cheese. And don't forget, in May and June, asparagus can be a pleasant alternative.
She glances at Cyril and Norman.
I shall answer for these children. Please let them in immediately.
On the double, Nanny McPhee, ma'am.
He turns on his heel and the boys follow him towards an entrance flanked by piled-up sandbags. They look back at Nanny McPhee to see that she has magically transformed out of the brown army uniform and back into her dowdy black outfit. The boys follow Sergeant Jeffries through the lobby. They take a lift to the 100th floor and march through a tactical planning room where a huge map is laid flat across a table. Uniformed staff use long sticks to push small plastic tanks and Spitfires into position on the map. At the farm...
All right, Phil. I'm ready to sign.
The girls rush in.
Mum! What are you doing?
You know what I'm doing, darling.
But you've got to wait for Norman.
No more waiting. If we wait another second, we'll lose the kidneys. I mean the sale.
Megsy, there's nothing that Norman can do about this.
In the War Office, Norman and Cyril go timidly down a long red carpet towards a uniformed military man, Lord Grey. Behind him is a large painting of a battle scene, and on either side of him on the desk is a lamp. He stands straight-backed and intimidating, his left breast adorned with medal ribbons.
What is the meaning of this, boy?
Sorry to disturb you, sir, but we need your help. We've come all the way from the country.
We?
He means me, Uncle. I mean, Uncle, your lordship.
And you are?
Norman, sir. Your nephew, sir.
Aunt Isabel's son.
Ah, yes, the girl who made that unfortunate marriage.
A happy marriage to my father, sir, who's fighting for your army, so I'll thank you to be more civil.
Lord Grey, who is clean-shaven but for a dark, tidy moustache, puts a pair of spectacles down on his desk and walks around it towards the boys.
And what is your business here, pray?
The boys eye each other.
Sir, we need you to find out what's happened to Norman's father. To Uncle Rory.
We got a telegram saying...
Yes?
He was killed in action. But I know it's wrong. I know he's alive.
I see. So you're saying that the telegram... A telegram sent from the War Office contained false information.
Exactly.
And you have proof, of course, otherwise you would not have dared to come here. Has your father contacted you since you received the telegram?
No.
Then one of his unit has been in touch, presumably.
Norman lowers his eyes.
No.
Then what proof have you?
I can feel it in my bones.
In your what? What?
I can feel it in my bones.
In your bones? Feel it in your bones?
Yes.
Great heavens, boy, do you mean you've persuaded my weak-willed son to bring you here in the middle of a war with some cock-and-bull story about a feeling you have in your bones?
He's not weak-willed. It was him who saved the piglets, and him that thought of helping us by coming here. And I know I'm right about my father. Please, can't you just inquire?
Lord Grey strides forward, his eyes ablaze.
There are thousands of men fighting in my army. Why should I give your father, however worthy he may be, my special attention?
Because they love him, and so does Auntie Isabel, and they need him. And I know why you sent us away to them too. Had nothing to do with bombs. I know you and Mother are getting a divorce.
Enough!
No, you will listen! You've made your lives and our lives a misery! Isn't that enough for you?
Father and son lock eyes.
At least help Aunt Isabel and Uncle Rory to be together.
Lord Grey furrows his brow and meets Norman's unyielding gaze. Lord Grey's eyes flit left and right dumbly. He goes to speak, but nothing comes out. He turns and goes back to his desk. The two smartly attired boys watch. As eyes down, Lord Grey adjusts his tie and picks up his spectacles. He stands for a moment with his head bowed slightly, then glances up at them.
Wait here.
Lord Grey walks out of the room and Norman puts a consoling hand on Cyril's shoulder. At the farm, Phil peers over Isabel's shoulder as she sits reading the contract at the kitchen table. He turns a pen between his fingers and licks his lips. He leans in close and Isabel turns her head with a frown.
Hurry along there, Isabel.
Well, I've got to read it, haven't I?
Right.
Mum, please wait. Please!
Stop it, Megsy.
As she continues to read, Celia hops up onto a chair.
So she'll be accepted in reserve.
A mouse! A mouse under the chair!
Celia points and Phil leaps up onto a smaller table where he crouches on all fours. Isabel goes purposefully to the armchair that Celia is pointing at and kneels down for a better look. Megsy looks at Celia with an air of bafflement and Celia points at Phil's pen on the table. Megsy steals it. In the War Office...
Are they really going to get a divorce, your mum and dad?
Cyril nods and looks at the floor.
So who will you live with?
Cyril shrugs.
My mother, I suppose. Won't make much difference. We hardly ever see him. Or her. We only ever get wheeled out for them on special occasions.
Norman steps forward, his eyes wide.
You can come live with us, you know. You and Celia.
It's jolly decent of you.
Lord Grey re-enters the room. Close behind him, a lieutenant trails a length of telegraphic ticker tape. He and Lord Grey look at the boys with sad eyes.
I'm sorry.
What does it say?
I'm afraid he's MIA.
What's that?
Missing in action. Sorry, Norman.
Norman lowers his eyes.
Wait. Missing? Missing in action, not killed in action.
Not killed. The telegram you received was incorrect. In fact, there's no record of any telegram having been sent, which is something we should look into immediately.
I knew it! He's alive! Thank you, Uncle.
It's my nephew. He's a country boy. Rough diamond, as they say.
Norman hugs his uncle.
Come on, we've got to get back. We've got to tell Mum.
Cyril?
The boys are racing towards the door. They stop and turn round. Lord Grey walks towards them down the long room and stops in front of Cyril. They look at each other.
It's done you good, all that country air.
Cyril, with his chubby face and bushy blonde side-swept hair, gazes up at his father's lean, severe features.
Carry on.
I will, sir. I mean, father.
A friendly smile plays on his father's lips.
Righto.
Righto.
They shake hands. Cyril turns away and joins Norman by the wooden double doors. The boys glance back at Lord Grey, then leave the building. On the steps...
Norman, if the War Office never sent that telegram, it means the one you saw was forged. But who would forge a telegram saying someone was dead? Who would do something that awful? Uncle Phil! He's been trying to get Mum to sell our half of the farm. He must have known she'd sell if she thought Dad was dead. Got to hurry.
To Nanny McPhee.
He's not dead! He's only missing!
That is good news.
But we've got to get back quickly! We'll explain on the way!
The boys hop into Nanny's sidecar and don their goggles as she pulls away. At the farm, Isabel roots around beneath the armchair with a carpet beater.
There is no mouse.
Phil gets down.
I saw it. Must have escaped.
Celia steps down from the table.
Right. Isabel, let's just get this done, shall we?
He looks down at the table to see that his pen has disappeared. He lifts up the contract and the envelope it came in, but can't find it.
Have you got a pen?
He pats himself down and checks behind his ears.
Mum, please wait.
That's enough, Megsy. Phil, find a pen.
Another pen, right?
Isabel sits down at the table as Phil blunders about by the Welsh dresser. He rifles through a drawer, hurling knick-knacks over his shoulder and accidentally knocking things off shelves until he finally turns round, brandishing three pens.
Oh.
Megsy rushes up the stairs and calls up towards the rafters.
Nanny McPhee, we need you! Please, Nanny McPhee, we need you!
Her voice rises through the roof and is carried on the wind to Nanny McPhee as she hurtles along a country road on the motorbike.
Norman, could you hand me my stick, please?
Norman takes a grip on Nanny's stick.
Actually, better still, could you just bang it down on the road once, quite hard? Come on. Don't drop it. The paperwork involved in replacing it simply doesn't bear thinking about.
He bangs it.
Well done. Put it back.
Vincent is sitting in the barn when an elephant's trunk pats him on the back. He turns his head.
Hello.
The baby elephant trumpets. Phil puts the pens down in front of Isabel.
Mum, please don't. It's our farm. Don't sign it.
The elephant's trunk sucks a pen off the table.
Oh, so is this.
Celia and Megsy share a look.
And you just sign it. There.
He feels about for the pen, but it's not there.
Whip, whip. Where is the pen?
For heaven's sake, Phil.
The elephant vacuums up the other two pens in its snout.
Never mind.
Phil points at the table.
They were here.
Megsy and Celia stifle laughter. Vincent stands by the open door and the baby elephant slips out unseen.
I thought you wanted me to sign the thing.
I don't understand. Someone must have...
I don't think there are any more pens, Mum.
Phil's on his hands and knees. He rises slowly, glaring at Megsy as he does so. He sweeps his limp, floppy fringe from his forehead and shoots her a suspicious look. Nanny McPhee's motorbike rumbles along a straight road through the countryside.
Nanny McPhee!
Yes, dearie?
How fast can this thing go exactly?
She grins at Norman and pulls hard on the accelerator. Sparks burst from the bike's exhaust as it speeds up until it streaks along the road in a blur. At the farm, Phil shuffles comically round the table on his knees. He stops in front of Megsy and she shuts her eyes. Phil plucks the pen she stole from her brown leather tool belt and holds it up in mock disbelief.
Look what I found.
He stands up and takes the top off the pen.
Right, Isabel, let's get this thing done, shall we?
He hands Isabel the pen.
Let's get this signed, Isabel. Well, steady your hand. Steady your hand. There. just there.
Megsy and Celia step to one side.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
I can't think of anything that could stop him now.
An enemy plane flies over the countryside.
Achoo.
The disgruntled-looking pilot blows his nose into a handkerchief as he works the controls. The girls grimace as Isabel goes to sign the contract. There's a big red button on the pilot's control stick.
Yes.
He adjusts a pair of flight goggles resting on his head and sniffles. Isabel writes her first name on the contract. The enemy pilot's big nose hits the red button as he sneezes. The room shakes suddenly and a splash of ink spills from the fountain pen, spoiling Isabel's signature. They all rush to the window. Outside in the barley field is a big bomb.
CUXB. What's that?
An unexploded bomb. We have them in London. Could go off at any second.
What?
Might not. Depends.
But it'll destroy the harvest.
It's a sign. They're coming for me. They're gonna kill me! They're gonna kill me!
Who's going to kill you?
The hit women! The lady heavies!
I'm here! Stop all that panicking! Stop it!
I can't stop it! I'm gonna die!
I'm going to get under the table.
I'm going to put the kettle on.
Mind your milk and two shots.
Thank God. You have to arrest me. You have to arrest me now before they get here.
What? Arrest me now? I repeat, arrest you for what? What's the crime? There's got to be a crime.
Try forgery.
Norman, where have you been?
To the War Office. Dad's alive.
Isabel falls back onto a chair.
What?
Uncle Phil forged the telegram.
Yes, Norman's right. There's your crime. Now will you arrest me?
Phil, you... Look, none of you seem to realise that there could be a fatalistic explosion at any second of the
moment. Quiet, please, quiet, please, all of you.
She raises a hand.
Norman? Come here.
He goes over to her.
Dad's missing in action.
She nods, holding back tears.
Go on.
But I can feel it in my bones that he's alive.
She smiles.
Oh, well then. Must be true.
They smile at each other.
Oh, thank you, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling boy.
And Cyril.
Cyril, you too. Oh, Cyril, come here.
Nanny leaves.
Oh,
do
Did you hear that? I'm a forger, a villainous forger.
Leave it, Phil. There's a bomb out there what needs dealing with.
Bomb? Bomb? Quick, come and look.
Here's the cuffs, Phil. Sort it out yourself. Now, bombs.
To UXB. That means unexploded bomb.
But the barley, if it goes off, it will be destroyed.
Please use it in your box.
No! Cuff me to you! To you! That way I'll be safe.
Phil wears one of the handcuffs. The others turn to look at him.
Can someone help me with these, please?
You don't deserve any help, you completely wicked person.
Please, I'm begging you. Megsie.
Allow me.
Isabel grabs the handcuffs and leads Phil across the room. She handcuffs him to a high rail above the oven. She glares at him.
I mean, thank you.
The rocket-shaped bomb sticks up from the barley at a jaunty angle, its nose cone buried in the ground. Old Mr. Doherty stands atop a ladder at the bomb's smoking back end, consulting some instructions. He calls over to Isabel and the children.
I'll advance to disarm the device.
Mr. Edelweiss lands on a nearby roof. Nanny McPhee has joined them too. Mr. Doherty peers inside the bomb and reels back in fright, toppling the ladder and landing with a thud in the barley.
He fell over.
I think he may have fainted.
Who's going to defuse it now?
Boys, chuck up Mr. Doherty and put that ladder back up. Celia, get his pamphlet. You read out the instructions because you've got the best diction.
Nanny McPhee, please help me stop them.
Somehow, I doubt that will be possible.
Nanny McPhee's unsightly nose has been replaced by an altogether more flattering one. Phil is still handcuffed to the metal rail in the kitchen. He fidgets uncomfortably.
Anyone there? It's just I'm not comfy.
Steam issues from the back of the towering bomb as Megsie looks inside from the top of the ladder.
Defusing your bomb. 3 simple steps to an explosion-free day. Step 1. Open the vent situated by the tail fin.
Open the vent!
Open the vent!
Open the vent!
Vent! Open! What's next?
Step 2. Cut the blue wire.
Blue wire!
Blue wire!
Megsie takes a large pair of scissors from her tool belt and attempts to cut the wire, but it's protected by coiled metal and the blades won't fit through the gaps. Nanny McPhee watches. Megsie calls down to the others.
These are going to be too big!
What else can we use?
Has anyone got a pen knife?
They check their pockets. Celia's face lights up.
Ooh!
She takes a pair of dainty nail scissors from a small case.
Try these.
She hands them to Cyril, who hands them to Norman, who in turn hands them up the ladder to Megsie.
These are perfect!
Well done, Celia.
Megsie leans in through the portal at the back of the bomb and uses the nail scissors to snip the blue wire.
What's next?
In the kitchen, Phil whisks eggs in a bowl. He clamps the whisk in his mouth and adds salt before dabbing his finger into the mixture and giving it a taste. He takes the bowl from his shackled hand and pours its contents into a pan on the stove. Topsy and Turvy.
Hello, Phil.
They're in nurses' uniforms. In the field.
Step 3. Cut the red wire.
Red wire!
Red wire!
Megsie leans inside the bomb with the nail scissors. She extends her arm, but can't quite reach the wire.
Can you see it?
Is it there?
Have you done it?
Be quiet, I can't reach it.
She tries again. Celia bites her fist. Mrs. Doherty hobbles over.
Oh! Isn't it exciting?
Shh!
What?
Megsie reaches in as far as her arm will go, cocking one leg up behind her for balance. The scissors hover ever closer to the wire, and she makes the cut. She beams.
I did it! Well done! Jolly good! Megsie, well done!
Needles on the bomb's various gauges go haywire. The bomb judders.
What's it doing?
We've got such good news, Phil. We're not going to remove your kidneys after all.
That's right. Mrs. Big has decided that kidney removal just wasn't good enough for you.
It lacked finesse.
She wants us to stuff you, Phil. Stuff you. And put you in the entrance to the casino as a warning to others.
Well, you can't do that.
Oh, don't worry, Phil. Miss Turvey's a professional.
A stern Miss Turvey holds up a stuffed owl.
Here is an early example of my work.
And here's how you'll look.
A doll.
It's uncanny, isn't it? Only thing is, we will have to scoop you out while you're still... well...
alive.
No!
What does it say about the lion?
You can check yourself, there is absolutely nothing.
Wait, there's a footnote. On certain enemy bombs, there will be a step four. Cut the green wire.
I can't see any green wire. It must be covered by all this grey stuff. It's hard as nails.
Altamont, I don't want you to miss the bomb going off. Come on, dear.
Right here. Warning. If the green wire is protected with explosive putty...
putty?
Red lights will come on, beginning the countdown to explosion!
The countdown begins.
Why is that at the back?
We all need to take cover right now!
Calm down, Leslie! Look!
Edelweiss.
But wait! Leslie, calm down now!
Numbered block spin as the bomb counts down.
Mr. Edelweiss is eating the putty! Leslie, calm down now!
5, 4, 3... Mr. Edelweiss flies out of the way. A numbered block stops spinning to display the number 2. Megsie snips the green wire and the bomb stops trembling. The final block spins to stop halfway between 2 and 1, and the needles on the gauges plummet. Megsie salutes and Mr. Edelweiss stands to attention.
We did it!
Nanny McPhee looks on as they celebrate. Gone are her gnarled features and unsightly blemishes. Just one imperfection remains, her front tooth, which protrudes over her bottom lip like a strange flat fang.
The bomb's been defused!
Oh, it was nothing.
Mr. Doherty faints again. Megsie climbs down the ladder into her mother's arms. Isabel and the children hug. The wind ruffles the feather in Nanny McPhee's hat.
Lesson 4. To be brave is complete.
Mr. Edelweiss has started to expand.
From Mr. Edelweiss! He's full of explosive putty! Won't he go off?
Mr. Edelweiss swells up into a bloated black ball as he floats overhead. Nanny McPhee smiles.
Take cover, everyone.
She looks up.
Leave this to me.
Go, go, go as fast as you can!
A scalpel, syringe, saw, mallet and ladle are laid out on the kitchen table. Topsy and Turvey take an impossibly long drip stand out of a medical bag and grin maniacally at Phil. Mr. Doherty, Isabel and the children all watch from a safe distance as Nanny McPhee stands in the middle of the field with her arms outstretched. The massively inflated Mr. Edelweiss drifts down into her hands and she sends him floating gently skywards.
There.
Mr. Edelweiss rises up into the air like a feathery black beach ball as the others look on in awe. Nanny McPhee lifts her magic stick and bangs it against the ground. Mr. Edelweiss lets out an enormous burp. The gale force belch flattens the barley, carving a long straight pathway towards the distant farmhouse. Just as Miss Turvey grabs the ladle, the kitchen windows are flung open and the almighty gust sends their implements flying. Phil's legs are lifted off the ground as the ladies struggle to stay upright. Phil gawps in disbelief as Miss Topsy cartwheels through the air, spinning wildly as she's propelled through the open door. Miss Turvey loses her grip on the door jamb and is sent hurtling out after her. She somersaults through the farmyard. As the gale subsides, the door swings shut and Phil's feet return to the ground. He grins.
Well done, Phil.
He starts for the door but is yanked back by the handcuffs and falls over. He sits down glumly on a hot hob. Isabel and the children watch as a magical force sweeps across the field through the barley.
What's happening to the barley?
Norman and Cyril watch open-mouthed as do the girls and Mr. Doherty in his round-rimmed spectacles and warden's helmet. Isabel and the boys link hands as they're buffeted by the blustery wind. The wind knocks Mr. Doherty over and Mrs. Doherty tries to take shelter behind a trailer. Annie McPhee stands serenely in the eye of the storm as the magical hurricane sweeps the barley into a tall column around her. The ladder goes whistling off into the sky and the bomb is pulled out of the ground and transformed into sparkling light. The barley forms a glittering cloud above Nanny McPhee. The others watch in wonderment. The shimmering barley cloud dances in the sky, taking on the forms of various animals: a plodding elephant with a bird perched on its back, an elegant whale, a shoal of fish, a swimming dolphin. A galloping bear, a couple of sprightly piglets. More piglets form, then dissolve into another to form a giant sheaf of barley. A magnificent fireworks display erupts against the pale blue sky. A shower of magical golden glitter rains down. The children raise their cupped hands and Mr. Doherty tries to catch some in his helmet. Mrs. Doherty uses her handbag. Vincent turns and gawps at the field.
Cool.
The others take a look.
What's happened?
Vincent is open-mouthed. All about the field, the barley has been collected into bales. Nanny McPhee stands amidst the harvested crop.
The harvest's in.
Row upon row of barley bales dot the open field. Here and there stand larger, taller stacks. Perched on a ladder, Mr. Edelweiss folds a wing across his breast and takes a little bow. Nanny McPhee bows to him in return.
Look! There's a slide! Come on, everybody!
The ladder leans against one of the tall barley stacks, as does the chute of a children's slide. The kids climb the ladder. Norman is first down the slide, followed by Megsy, then Mr. Doherty. Mrs. Doherty stands with Nanny McPhee.
Are you off?
They watch the children.
I am.
They smile and share a look.
Thank you for having me to stay, Aggie.
Thank you for asking, Nanny McPhee.
They hug. Mrs. Doherty gives Nanny McPhee a gentle pat on the back and they share one last look before parting company. Mrs. Doherty blinks sadly as she watches Nanny McPhee walk away across the field. Celia points to a medal on Megsy's chest.
Look! That's one of Nanny McPhee's medals. You have one too. It's the green one.
Oh, that one's my favourite.
Ooh.
Vincent has one too, as does Isabel for Leaps of Faith.
Why has she given us her medals?
Let's ask her. Where is she?
They look around. Megsy points.
There!
Walking away across the field in the distance.
Where's she going?
She's leaving you. What?
She can't be. Why?
Because you don't need her anymore.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
But I want her to stay.
Oh, dear, you've forgotten how she works, haven't you?
How?
When you need her, but do not want her, then she must stay. When you want her, but no longer need her, then she has to go.
That's not fair. We didn't mean to want her.
What do you mean we don't need her? Are you quite mad?
They race after her across the field. To Mr. Doherty.
Nanny McPhee doesn't like goodbyes. I remember from when I was little.
She holds up her old baby's rattle. She and her husband smile at each other and look out over the field. Nanny McPhee makes her way down a narrow footpath flanked by trees and vegetation. The others run after her.
Come back! They might not need you, but I do! I need you! I need you! Desperately! Oh, come back!
Keep going, Mum! Don't stop, Mum! I'll lose her!
Really, oh, come back! Come back!
Isabel runs ahead of the children. She turns a corner, passes through a wooden gate and slows to a stop.
No, we don't.
The children catch her up and they all gaze up at a hillside dotted with poppies. A man walks down the hill, his left arm in a sling. Nanny McPhee nods politely at him. He drops his army kit bag and runs down the hill towards them, waving and grinning broadly. Norman, Megsy and Vincent beam and race towards him through the tall grass. Norman flings his arms around his father, who spins him round, then puts him down to hug Vincent. Isabel approaches and Mr. Green looks up to see her. He steps forward and their lips meet in a lingering lover's kiss. They hold each other tight, then beckon Norman, Megsy and Vincent. They all hug. Mr. Green shakes hands with Cyril and Celia, then hugs them too. Nanny McPhee looks back from the crest of the hill. Every last one of her imperfections has vanished, and she's now a beautiful, slender woman in her early 40s. She smiles.
Lesson 5, to have faith, is complete.
Nanny McPhee looks around for Mr. Edelweiss, whom she finds perched on a nearby log.
Hop on, then.
The bird jumps for joy and flutters up onto her shoulder. Nanny McPhee turns towards the valley, and with Mr. Edelweiss perched on her shoulder, she sets off down the hillside. Her distant figure dips behind the crest of the hill as she disappears from view. The end. Cartoon animation. Vincent pedals the Scratch-O-Matic and the needle on the happy-o-meter climbs. Directed by Susanna White. Three Piglets Have Their Backs Scratched by Swinging Brooms. Produced by Lindsay Doran, Tim Bevan, Eric Fellner. Written by Emma Thompson. The children tumble out from inside Nanny McPhee's cloak and scamper off behind four medicine bottles. Based on the Nurse Matilda character created by Christiana Brand, executive producers Deborah Osborne, Liza Chazin, Emma Thompson. Mr. Edelweiss hides behind one of the bottles, co-producer David Brown. The baby elephant helps itself to Dad's jam. Some of the pink jam spurts from its trunk, Emma Thompson. The elephant flings the jam at the gramophone horn. A piglet runs on a treadmill. Isabel runs back and forth on a seesaw, juggling the children in the air. Maggie Gyllenhaal. Phil clings to a branch high up a tree. Two piglets land on the branch and jump on his fingers, causing him to fall. Mr. Doherty throws a net over him and leads him away in handcuffs. Reese Iffens. Mrs. Doherty watches as the drawers on her shop wall open and close. Maggie Smith. In the Rolls-Royce, Blenkinsop passes Mr. Doherty and Farmer McCready at a bus stop. Bill Bailey, Sam Kelly, Daniel Mays. Doherty and McCready follow him in a double-decker bus. Asa Butterfield, Oscar Steer, Rosie Taylor-Ritson, Eros Vlahos, Lil Woods. Two Pigs Fly High on the Motorcycle and Sidecar. Director of Photography, Mike Ely. Production designer, Simon Elliott. Editor, Sim Evan Jones, ACE. Outside the War Office, men in bowler hats fight the Queen's Cavalry with umbrellas. Their hats and umbrellas are soon chopped to bits. Costume designer, Jacqueline Duran. Miss Topsy has her hair trimmed into the shape of a pig and Miss Turvey into the shape of an elephant. Makeup and hair designer, Peter King. Music by James Newton Howard, casting by Lucy Bevan. Four piglets do synchronised swimming in the pond. The elephant flies up from beneath the water and winks before coming down with a splash. Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang. Cast in order of appearance. Isabel Green, Maggie Gyllenhaal. Vincent Green, Oscar Steer. Norman Green, Asa Butterfield. Megsy Green, Lil Woods. Cyril Gray, Eros Vlahos. Celia Gray, Rosie Taylor-Ritson. Blenkinsop, Daniel Mays, Phil Green, Rhys Iffens, Mrs. Doherty, Maggie Smith, Miss Topsy, Sinead Matthews, Miss Turvey, Katie Brand, Nanny McPhee, Emma Thompson. Farmer McCready, Bill Bailey, Mr. Green, Ewan McGregor, Mr. Doherty, Sam Kelly, Sergeant Jeffries, Nonzo Anozi, Lord Grey, Ralph Fiennes, Lieutenant Addis, Ed Stoppard, Enemy Pilot, Toby Sedgwick. Stunt coordinators Lee Sheward, Paul Heisman, stunt performers Ray DeHaan, Paul Vincent Lowe, Nick Wilkinson, Tina Maskell, Annabelle Canavan. Associate producer Amelia Granger. Visual effects supervisor Adam McInnes, first assistant director Martin Harrison, production manager Simon Fraser, second unit director, director of photography Tony Slater Ling. A camera operator Philip Sindel, production sound mixer Simon Hayes, financial controller Michelle Tandy, location managers Dan Whitty, Adam Richards. Script supervisor Irene Chorko, supervising art director Bill Crutcher, children's casting Pippa Hall, post-production supervisor Deborah Harding, supervising sound editor, sound designer Glenn Fremantle, re-recording mixer Mike Dowson. For working title, Chief Operating Officer Angela Morrison, Executive in Charge of Production Michelle Wright, Production Executive Sarah Jane Robinson, Head of Legal and Business Affairs Shiraz Shah, Finance Director Tim Easthill. Costume Supervisor Jenny Hawkins, Costume Standbys Helen Wendy Ingham, Esther St. John Gray, Costume Assistants Edith Carla, Julia Goldsmith, Costume Cutter Jennifer Alford, Costume Makers Katrine Long, Helen Mackenzie Corby, Costume Breakdown Vicky Hallam. Hair and Makeup Artists Tamsin Barbosa, Paula Price, Trainee Assistant Makeup Artist Flora Moody, Additional Hair and Makeup Artist Leslie Smith. Standby Painter, Craig Gleason, Standby Carpenter, Paul Mara, Standby Rigger, Kevin Skinner, Standby Stagehands, Richard Dunning, James McIntyre. Construction Manager, Steve Bowen, Construction Buyer, Tracy Lowe, Odd Carpenter, Seamus O'Sullivan, Supervising Carpenters, Paul Duff, Dave Lowry, John O'Connor. Supervising Stagehand, Dave Smith, Hod Painter, Gary Crosby, Supervising Painter, Dean Dunham, Decorative Artist, Mark Heald. Children's Acting Coach, Celia Bannerman, Dialect Coach, Neil Swain, Tutors, Sharon Milton, Judith Phillips. Animal Trainers, Gary Moo, William Grange, Animal Coordinator, Julie Topman. Re-recording mixer Richard Pryke, mix technician Andrew Caller, effects re-recording technician Niv Adiri, Foley recordist Adam Mendez, Foley artist Jack Stew, Andrea King, ADR mixer Mark Appleby. Animated title sequence Voodoo Dog. False teeth supplied by Fangs FX. Executive in charge of music for Universal Pictures, Kathy Nelson. Music consultant, Nick Angel. Music editor, Joe E. Rand. Temp score music editor, James Bellamy. Assistant music editor, Sam Southwick. Music credits, The Best Things in Life Are Free, performed by Bing Crosby. Pick Yourself Up, performed by Harry Roy and his band. Stock photos by PA Photos, copyright 2009. Used with permission, stock photos by Corbis, copyright 2009. Used with permission, the trademark, the Times, and the masthead, a property of Times Newspaper Limited, reproduced with kind permission. Photographs used with the permission of the trustees of the Imperial War Museum, London Crown copyright, reproduced by permission of the controller of Her Majesty's Stationery Office. The baby elephant has its belly scratched by the Scratch-O-Matic, which runs magically by itself. ITFC audio description by Sam Clark was read by Alice Sanders. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character or history of any actual persons, living or dead, is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries, and its unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Copyright 2010, Universal Studios, all rights reserved. Working title: